Wednesday night edition of the Dunked On Basketball podcast, an episode that is one of my favorites to do normally, but perhaps the title is a little bit more real than we'd like, but we are at least going to limit this to talking about the NBA. The Time to Panic edition, we're going to look at some of the teams that have underperformed what we would have hoped or what their hopes might have been, and also look at some players as well, time permitting, to see if any of those, we'll try to rate these guys on a 1 to 10 scale and the teams as well to see whether they can snap out of it, how concerned you should be if you're a fan of these teams or players. Good afternoon, Danny, since we're recording this before we go to this Warriors game.
I feel like this is as close as we ever get to like flash judgments or hot takes, but of course we make them as tepid as we can.
Well, let's start with our sponsor today, Indochino. You can get any premium suit for just $389 at Indochino.com using that cap space code. And of course, that's a custom made suit that will fit you perfectly. Indochino.com, again, is where you find out more about them. Let's start with the New York Knicks, whose personnel has not fit as well as an Indochino suit so far.
It has not, and it feels bad when you're critical of an offseason and end up being right, because you want every team to work out. But there are a lot of different things that are concerning about the Knicks, but the biggest one for me is probably on the defensive end, just because that's harder to fix unless Noah just starts playing a lot better.
Yeah, their defensive rating when Noah is on the floor is not good. Still about last in the league levels, 109.9. We posited, at least, that they would defend pretty well with him on the floor. It seems like he and Porzingis would be a decent front court. Noah did miss much of training camp with that hamstring injury. Derrick Rose obviously missed training camp with his trial in LA, and so you can make the argument that those guys are having trouble getting back on track again, but they should be better than this, you'd like to say, but they also really don't have any stoppers on the perimeter. I don't know, even that, like, Rose can be okay at times. They don't have Courtney Lee isn't really big enough to guard the LeBron Jameses of the world, but there have been plenty of other people that have been killing them as well. And when you watch them, what stands out the most to you about their defense?
Normally, when a team plays big, you know, as they are playing Porzingis at the four and Noah at the five and Melo at the three, one of the things that you're usually getting is, you know, solid rebounding and shot contests, and they're not getting to enough on that end. That's concerning, because that's something that's harder to fix. And then the other part is just that it's not like there are these underserved players. Lance Thomas was definitely a better defender than some of the guys in their starting lineup, but outside of him, you know, Brandon Jennings isn't a whole lot better. You would expect Noah to be an improvement over Kylo Quinn, and so it isn't like a shakeup will really do that in terms of personnel. You could say in terms of effort or something else like that, but I'm just not seeing enough contesting from them.
Another big problem too is that they can't score at all except when their starters are on the floor. Every player on this team has a double digit offensive rating unless they're in the starting lineup, so that means like under 100 points per 100 possessions, and that could be an issue too. Nobody on that bench really is that great of an offensive player. Brandon Jennings hasn't done that well so far. They haven't really been able to succeed in using some of the main stars to prop up those bench units either. And yeah, it's just the individual players are just going to have to be better. They're going to have to communicate, but never fear, Kurt Rambis is now in charge of the Knicks defense, and Carmelo Anthony, just the shade that he throws towards Rambis is really great. He's like, well, you know, it's not really a situation that we enjoy, but we just have to live with it, basically was his quote.
Yeah, and Rose had a similarly apathetic, though Rose's was more nihilist, of like, oh, it doesn't mean anything anyway. But you get into these kind of deals, like, I mean, as our friend Kevin Pelton pointed out, Kurt Rambis's head coaching spots were not exactly typified with great defense. So you hope that as an assistant, he can hone that a little bit more, focus on that. But it really does have to come a lot from internal, you know, just improvement in terms of effort and everything like that. And you're right, though, that the offense is having some spillover, because it would make sense that this team would struggle a little bit in transition defense. They're not the most athletic groups, especially when they play big. And because, you know, it can be hard, the kind of the reverse of a feedback loop is that when you're missing shots, you get a little bit down on yourself, you can miss a rotation, things like that.
Another reason for concern here, it's not like they're shooting especially badly on three-pointers. They're a little bit above the league average, 35.9%. And on defense, they are giving up a high amount of opponent three-point percentage at about 38%, but not anything that is crazy high. And they're giving up a fair number of attempts as well. So give me, you know, the expectations for a lot of this fan base. I think I went slightly under their like 38 wins or whatever their over under was, but others, certainly the organization was probably thinking 45, 50 wins even for this group. Some of their fans were. If 45 wins is the benchmark here, or let's say making the playoffs is the benchmark for this team, how panicked are you 1 through 10 right now?
7, because there are some structural things that it's hard to imagine getting better, but there are also elements that can improve. Their defensive rebounding has been really rough. They're only grabbing 72% of the misses, which is far lower than most teams do. So if things like that even just regress to the mean, that'll help. And their offense shouldn't be as bad as it has been. So it's a 7 because it's not a guarantee that they will improve. And also because it's not like the top 8 are running away with the East, but there also is not much of an indication that if a team really kicks into gear, that it's necessarily going to be the Knicks.
Yeah, one nice thing for the Knicks is that they're at least not taking so many long twos anymore. I think the offense could come around. And I guess the other thing we have to talk about too for them is that Kristaps Porzingis looks great on offense. And I think that's part of a recalibration there to use him more as he becomes clearly, I think, their most efficient offensive option. That's something that maybe could provide some upside for these guys. That at least Kristaps is playing pretty well. I would agree. I would say, yeah, 7 is about right. I mean, I think they do have the excuse that Noah is working back from the injury, that Rose wasn't integrated. So I would say that I don't expect them to get worse from here on out, at least, so we'll see what happens. And they are going to try and focus more on defense. The offense has been okay. At least they have that going for them. We kind of worried that their spacing might be really bad with Rose and Noah, and they've actually scored reasonably well. Rose has not been efficient, but he's at least looked okay. He doesn't get to the foul line anymore and he can't hit threes, so he's not going to be an efficient player, but he at least has had some moments. They've had some okay wins, like the one on the road against the Bulls. So I'm not ready to write them off yet completely. I think a 7 is about right for them. Who we got next?
Another team that you and I both weren't in love with at the beginning of the season, the Indiana Pacers.
Let's start by thinking of what the expectations were for this team and its fan base. I think that's a good way to calibrate this for how high the panic meter really should be for them.
So, I mean, I would say on average, some people said, it would be great if they finished in the top, like what they hosted a playoff series, but they at least make the playoffs, but let's say 4-6. Do you think that would be fair?
Yeah, I think anything below the 5th or 6th seed would be a pretty big disappointment. And while they don't have an awful record right now at 3-4, they do have a negative 5.5 net rating, and the defense, third worst in the league, 109.3 points per 100 possessions right now. And what's concerning about this for me is that they are failing in the same ways that we thought before the season they might fail. And that's always concerning, right? If you think, okay, these guys are pretty good, they're going to have a good defense, and they're not that playing that well so far, you expect maybe that they'll get back to your preseason expectation. But we all thought that the defense could be a lot worse. We didn't think it would be this bad, though. And they have just, their transition defense has been horrendous. I mean, they're getting lit up by teams like the Nets, the Bulls, who have looked decent on offense at times, the Bucks. Their defense was atrocious in that game. The Bucks are not an offensive powerhouse, so they haven't even really played any of these awesome offenses yet. Charlotte, a team that doesn't have a crap load of offensive talent, lit them up too. And we had talked about how the pillars of this franchise defensively last year were Jan Mahimi, George Hill, Frank Vogel, and Paul George, and only one of them is left now, and they're starting Teague and Monte Ellis. Maybe you would say, especially because Ellis hasn't been that great so far, if this continues, they'll look at moving him out of the starting lineup and getting CJ Miles in just to get a little more size and defense on the floor. Miles Turner has had some high block games, but also has not been able to really master the nuances. Their communication has been awful. Their effort has been awful. Nate McMillan, not known as a defensive coach in his previous stops. All of that makes me think that this is pretty real. And yeah, 3-4, it's not too late for them to fix it, but playing into the same concerns I had before the start of the season, not good.
We've talked about the defense, and that is certainly the reason to be concerned, because we didn't expect it to be good in the first place. But the trade-off there, the intention at least, was that their offense would hum and that their offense would sing, because they have all these creators, all these guys that, you know, specifically create for themselves, whether that be Jeff Teague, Monte Ellis, Thad Young, Paul George, you know, all these guys. And when I've watched them, what I've noticed is not only if you want to go the statistical route with their offensive rating, but they just look disjointed on that end. You know, this isn't a team that is getting a ton of easy buckets, even when things are going their way defensively.
Yeah, they're only mid-pack right now, a little bit below the league median in offensive rating, 103.8. And so they have been able to get a little more offense, which you'd expect with a shooting center like Turner. Paul George has not been able to dominate at the start of the season the way he has in previous years, and hasn't been as much of a focal point, I don't think. Jeff Teague has been awful. We're going to get to him in the players section. So I think this trade-off that they've made to try to get more offense, all right, maybe the defense was going to get a little worse. I think they were hoping, you know, they could get into being a top 10 offense and hope that their defense could get to be in the lower end of the top 10. And they're just not even close to that. And this thought that, oh, well, don't worry, like Dan Burke is still there. It's his system. Well, apparently, like, the culture that Frank Vogel had instituted was pretty important there. So I'm going to go with an 8 for these guys. I am definitely concerned about them and their defense.
I'm going to go with a 6 just on the idea that CJ Miles could help them. And I think Turner and George can play. As much as they haven't been the problem, they can play better than they have. And so I think that there's a reason that they could turn it around at least partially. Also, the Pacers have enough talent where they can kind of just pull out some games, just grit them out, get a little bit lucky and things like that, maybe more than the Knicks at this point. So I think they have a greater chance of a mild disappointment, you know, maybe getting the 7 or 8 or something like that than maybe the Knicks. So I'm going to have them at a 6 for right now with the open mind to revise that higher in the very near future.
Yeah. So you think they'll make the playoffs still?
I think they have a good shot at it. I mean, because none of those teams at the fringe of the East have really impressed me enough to say, oh, they're in real trouble there. Because that early on in the year, I'm thinking about, like, let's say the parallel being that year where Oklahoma City and New Orleans were gunning in the West, where it's like, oh, it's going to take 45 wins. I don't think it's going to take 45 wins to make the playoffs in the East this year.
I agree with you on that. From Indiana to Indochino. Indochino has been a longtime sponsor of the show, and for good reason. They've had great results. People who have bought their suits have tweeted me and let me know that they've really enjoyed it. I personally love their suits, and it's because it's finally releasing us from this tyranny of off-the-rack suits that are way too expensive. And, you know, I have some pretty nice suits that are like maybe even like close to $1,000 that I bought off the rack. They tailored it for me. I wore one of them to the game actually on Monday. And I was just struck by how much worse fitting it is than my Indochino suit that I got done, because that's fit custom for me. And I have somewhat of a different shape body than a lot of people do. So the way to get started with Indochino, go to Indochino.com, enter that cap space code, and you can get any premium suit for just $389. And cap space, easy to remember. We talk about it all the time on the program. The level of customization is fantastic too. You can do your lining, lapels, where the pockets are. They have like 50 different fabrics. You can get a monogram on there. It's really a remarkable product, and something that is, I don't see myself buying a suit anywhere else other than there for a long, long time. Indochino.com, promo code CAPSPACE. The Orlando Magic, again, only 3-4, so not in that big of a hole, but to me, they seem like they're in trouble.
My greatest concern is that there was this theory of the team that I agreed with. It was talked about when I did the Real Jam Radio Southeast Division preview with Prada, Mike Prada and Adi Joseph, about the idea that, hey, this team has a lot of defensive talent. They could really put it together on that end, and their offense is probably still going to be bad, but at least they could, you know, let's say they can be a top 10 defense and then be a top 20, let's call it, offense. That would be enough to, you know, to win some games. Teams in that kind of mold have done well in the recent past early on, and they have dealt with some inconsistency and some injury. Even though they haven't played great opponents overall, they've had some tough ones. Their defense has not been up to snuff.
Yeah, it hasn't. And while they are 3-4, they got destroyed at home by Miami. They got destroyed on the road by Detroit. They got back into the game in Cleveland at the very end, but they're getting killed for most of that game. Probably should have lost in Philly. Won at home against Sacramento. Beat the John Wall-less Wizards at home by 2. And then lost by 32 in Chicago. And they've had teams putting up like a buck 8, a buck 12 on them. And this is a team, as you mentioned, that's going to have to win with defense. They do not have the scoring or the spacing or the ability to get to the foul line where they can score with teams. And so if this isn't going to be a top 10 defense, this is going to be a bad team. And they are far, far beyond that right now. Where are they at right now in defense?
They are 20. 25th 25th. And that's actually better. That's better than they are on offense, because I think they're 29th in offense.
Yeah, and it's not like they've played some murderer's row of offenses. They've actually played many of the worst offenses in the league other than the Cavs, and they didn't stop the Cavs either. So they're really, you would hope that they would be better than this based on this schedule. And they have a relatively tough schedule coming up. They've got Wolves and Jazz at home. I mean, that's going to be a huge one for the Wolves too. That's tonight. And then on the road at the Thunder and Pacers. I mean, they should be able to get healthy potentially if they're actually going to be any good, because then they've got home games against the Pels and the Mavs, away at the Bucks, home against the Suns, Wizards again, Bucks again. So they actually don't have that bad of a starting schedule. But if they're not over 500 after that stretch, I mean, this is a team again that has a lot of pressure to make the playoffs. Even worth thinking about them as a high 30s win team. And especially if the defense doesn't improve, I'm going to be really concerned. And also just their young guys don't really look that great either, which we'll talk a little bit more. So I'm going to put it at about a 6, just because I think they can get better on defense. I hope that Vogel is going to figure it out. They'll find a way to work Biombo in a little bit better. He's really been terrible on offense, which is something actually that's a concern, because he's good on good offenses where he's got some space to work and he could actually maybe get up for some alley-oops or work on the offensive glass. But when he's playing on teams with terrible spacing, then he's just not going to be able to do anything. There's too many people around him that are going to bother him and strip the ball from him, and he's not going to be able to go up. It is a concern that fit might be a really poor one. That's about it for them. Yeah. So I'd say, you know, 6, 7, 6.5, something like that.
I'm at a 5 with them because there are alignments.
You're so reasoned here.
That we have, there are alignments that we haven't seen. Aaron Gordon should be a 4. Maybe Frank Vogel sees the light and at least uses him as a second unit power forward. And Biombo, I mean, what I would be doing is considering Biombo starting. You know, their offense is going to suck either way. So just have a better defense, get some stability on that end, and then get transition points. You know, kind of that idea. It's in a way, yeah, it's similar.
I don't think they're going to do any of those things with the player usage. I agree. I would totally start Biombo. I'd bring Vucevic off the bench. But Vucevic is one of the only people on this team who can score. That's he's going to be upset that he's not starting. You could really upset the locker room there. It might have to end up trading him. He definitely is a very prideful player. And Vogel likes to play with two bigs. The organization made this big commitment to him working through and playing the three. So if such changes are to occur, I wouldn't see them as remotely imminent at this point.
They certainly aren't imminent. But for me, when you get into the big concerns this early in the year is when I don't think there's a chance it can get better. And with a team like the Magic, it could. It's just less likely. So, you know, I do see a pathway for them. And also, I think they've played below their talent level. And so that makes me feel more comfortable. Like, the worst is when a team is playing well and they're still bad. And I think they're just playing poorly.
Another concern for them, it's not like opponents are shooting really hot on threes either. The opponents are shooting 32% on threes. So I don't see much in the way of like structural things. And while the Magic are shooting terribly on threes themselves, 30.4%, big surprise, they aren't good at shooting threes. So I don't expect that to get much better. If, in fact, it even does improve, and I guess it will a little bit, but not much. So I don't see much hope for them in kind of the more luck-based stats either. I think they've been exactly, you know, they've probably actually been lucky to be 3-4 given where they're at in terms of point differential right now.
Well, a team that I don't think any of their fans would feel lucky for them at their current record is the Washington Wizards. The Wizards, you know, with high expectations, they're currently 1-5 and they're just dealing with a wide variety of potential issues.
Yeah, the Wizards, we'd be feeling a lot better about them if John Wall had played in that game and they had won at Orlando and they were just 2-4. Instead, they also lost that double overtime game on... Oh, no, sorry, that's preseason. Never mind. Oh, yeah, they lost that overtime game against Memphis with Marc Gasol hitting some crazy threes. That wasn't so good. I mean, they lost at Atlanta by 15. They beat Atlanta at home. That's a nice win. And they lost at home to the Rockets. So you can't really point to any of these games where you're like, oh, this one game was a disastrous result. It was so far below expectations if this team is going to be decent. I think now they are certainly feeling like they're panicking right now with some of the quotes coming out from Candace Buckner after their last game at home against the Rockets. And the defense could be a little bit better, certainly. You know, they've given up over 110 points, including that overtime game, 4 times now. So the hope was that these guys would get a lot better on defense under Scott Brooks. And the bench has also been awful as well. They're going to have to get better defensively. Hopefully Brooks can make that happen. Jan Mahimi coming back, I think it will really help solidify their defense as well, especially on the second unit. But all that said, if they were 2-4, I wouldn't be worried at all. And Wall missed that one game. So I'm only at like a 3.5 still with these guys, especially because, as you mentioned, I don't think anyone in the East is running away and hiding from them.
I have it at a 6 with the idea being not as much on the defensive end. I think that can figure it out. But they're a bottom 10 offense too. And they don't have as much in terms of personnel, in terms of fit that can really do that. And their second units could improve. But what makes Washington so compelling for this is how it could change in the immediate future. Because we talked about how they're reacting to this 1-5 not particularly well. They're not doing a great job of handling it. And now they have home games against the Celtics and the Cavs. Then they go at Bulls, at Sixers, and then they have a stretch that I think is going to be the clarifying one for them, hosting the Knicks, the Heat, and the Suns. So if they go through that relatively cleanly, then you drop that by having a 6, drop that to a 4 or 3 or maybe even lower. If it gets bad, you could be getting into the 8-9 range really quickly, just because this is a team where it feels like the wheels can come off.
That said, here are the teams that are ahead of them right now. I mean, they basically are competing with the Bucks, who are 4-3, but I expect them to regress a little bit. The Nets, the Magic, the Pacers, the Knicks, and the Heat. One of those teams is looking like they're going to make the playoffs if you want to write the Bulls in, which I'm not necessarily going to do yet either. And nobody else really is looking like they're going to run and hide, as I mentioned. So I think that it's not like any of those teams are really scaring you that much, and they're only 2 games behind them right now. So if they can turn it around, I'm not that worried.
But I the psyche of this team, it just feels a little bit fragile. And the other part for me is that Scott Brooks' teams in general have done a really nice job competing on the defensive end, whether they had the talent or not. You know, that was one of the trademarks of Oklahoma City, even in the young years, was that they did a pretty good job defensively. This is not a young team that needs to get defensive discipline. They just need to play better on that end. And they can. And I would expect that they will. But they need to do that. And that's even just getting into the playoffs. I think you could even, some would have had them more in that 4-6 range for the Pacers, but that was probably unrealistic.
Did you give a number for them?
6.
Miami, don't need to spend a ton of time on them because I think they've been about maybe where people expect. But in terms of, hey, this team might actually be able to challenge for 40 wins, I think it's not looking great. They're 2-4. The defense has still been really good. They are 6th in the league so far in defense, and I think that's the one thing that we hope for. The offense, as expected, has been pretty bad. Josh Richardson, I haven't had a chance to see him yet since he's come back. He's really their one cause for hope, I think. And their 2 wins, one was in overtime against the Kings, the other one was that one on opening night against Orlando, and they had like that blowout in Oklahoma City, but they've been competing. I think I would put this at like a 2, just because they didn't have that high of expectations, and I think they're at least defending in the way that you hoped that they would. You just have to hope that they can find some offense somehow with this team, and they're shooting terribly on 3-pointers, but kind of another team that does not really have that type of personnel.
We watched them together on opening night and thought that was a nice performance by Miami, and not only was that their best game of the year, but it looks worse now with how Orlando has struggled. You know, that we were a little bit higher on them than how it's gone so far. That is not a death sentence, but the challenge for Miami is just, how are they going to reliably beat people? I mean, Whiteside's had some nice games. That one they won against the Kings, that was also DeMarcus Cousins fouling out right before overtime. That was a game the Kings absolutely could have won and didn't. And so with the Heat, I have them at a 3 just because of the idea of expectations and that they have more talent. You know, Josh Richardson, I saw him, I think it was against OKC a little bit, or Toronto, and I saw him limp for a second. I think it was just like somebody stepped on his foot, but I had that, you know, that mini heart attack you have when a guy's coming back from an injury and doesn't look right. But they are defending, and I think that's the most important part. And so if you believe that they can continue that, as I think we both do, and that the offense can get better than it has been, I think they're 28th right now, then, you know, they can get into that range. And I think the most didn't have them as high as the other teams in the first place, so a 3.
Yeah, the only concern is that if they still are 5-10 games below 500 well into the season, not a playoff contender, how long does that defensive effort continue on this team? How long before they start really going into tank mode, which this team is going to do? Last one, the Philadelphia 76ers, 0-6, obviously not a team that was expected to make the playoffs, but people were talking about 27 wins, 25 wins for this group. They're 0-6. I mean, the thing that still terrifies me about them is just they're playing for all the talent that they have with Embiid now, Sergio Rodriguez coming in, they brought in Henderson. They just still can't score. They're 6 points per 100, basically below the worst team in the league, 90 points per 100 possessions on defense, or I'm sorry, on offense.
It has been kind of impressive that they're still so bad. I mean, because they added a lot of talent. I mean, they still, because of injuries and everything else, haven't gotten all the way to the idea that we were hopeful with them, that they could get 48 minutes from NBA caliber guys almost every night, you know, Simmons being out.
Yeah, their bench has been trash.
Yeah, so and they're getting, it's a deeper part of their bench with Jared Bayless being out and everything else than was ideal for them. But my concern with them is just at a two, because their offense has been terrible, but, you know, they're missing a lot of the reasons for optimism on that end. Embiid has looked good. I would say he's looked better than I expected. You know, he has to be one of the front runners for Rookie of the Year at this point. And Sarge has had some shaky moments, has had some good moments. And really, that's what you're looking for. And the offense and defense, you know, having their struggles at this point, it feels like it's more a part of the growing process than something that is going to persist once they get everyone together.
Yeah, one of their big problems is just they still can't hit a shot. Robert Covington, especially, a stalwart for them, their best player these last couple of years, is shooting 25% on threes right now. So he's going to start doing better than that. And they are taking a lot of threes. They're taking open threes, and they have at least some better shooters. Like, I think they'll get somewhat better on offense. But yeah, I mean, it's still pretty disturbing how bad they've been. And the defense hasn't been too awful. You know, it hasn't been like lower. It's in the 20s probably, but 105.7. So if they can, but I mean, you know, is their offense going to get more than 5 points per 100 better? Like, you're looking at another negative 10 net rating season. And I think when you look at the panic meter, it's more, I think, about Brett Brown's employment at this point, maybe, than it is necessarily, you know, the team's long-term franchise, long-term future right now.
Yeah, I mean, Brett.
So I, as far as like Brett Brown is concerned, I would put it like a 7 or an 8.
For Brown, I would put it a 7. Yeah, because he has that, and especially with the change in ownership since he got it, that's something that you always look for as a potential.
Or management.
Sorry, that's what I meant. Yeah, change in management when you get that. And so that's always a concern for a coach when they're there, because everybody wants to get their guy. And they have a lot of, let's call it, plausibility in terms of him, especially with the offense struggling as much as they are. I mean, I think they're like 5 points per 100 possessions behind the entire league right now. And that's untenable. You know, that's too far.
Let's talk about some of the players in the Eastern Conference here. Break it up a little bit before we move to the West. The Church of Hazonia, how are you guys doing with donations at this point? It seems like maybe like some of the arches could be crumbling, like you don't really have the money to fix it right now.
Yeah, it's not doing super well. And the biggest concern is that we're not really seeing much growth from Hazonia. You know, like the idea when you have somebody, and he came into the league pretty young, so you get a little bit of buffer time, especially with the uncertainty that surrounded the Magic last year and to a point this year. This is more turnover than uncertainty, let's call it that. And he's basically kind of playing a similar role, similar minutes, and just being less efficient. And when I watch the Magic, I'm not seeing really these. Last year I wrote about this for B-Ball Breakdown, actually, about how for Hazonia it was all about flashes. It was about seeing those moments of inspiration, those moments that are like, okay, this is what he's going to be as a successful pro. We've seen fewer of those, I would say, this year than the early part of last year. And you always want to see more. You want to see these young guys, maybe their handle gets better, maybe their shot gets more reliable, or they can do something else. And I'm not seeing that from him in a way that is providing encouragement.
Big part of his problem, though, is just that he's shooting terribly on threes. I mean, that's the one thing that I do have some reliability for with him. I think he can at least shoot league average on threes. He did that last year. He's only at 18% right now. But other than that, he's just not able to create efficient shots other than just taking a three-pointer. And what's most disturbing to me is that he hasn't really been playing that much. He's only at 17 minutes a game, less than last year. And this is a team that desperately needs his skill set. They just need someone who can make a shot so badly. And yeah, it hasn't been going in, but the hope was he could at least come in and be the third wing on this team and be effective. And when he's on the floor, they have been really bad. Negative 16.2 net rating, as their whole bench has really, really struggled. And so that's to say, really, even nothing of his defense, which hasn't been that great either. And they can't score when he's on the floor. With all those things being the case, it's not looking good for him when you consider especially some of the players who went later than him in the draft, he was somewhat of a surprise selection. And until further notice, I mean, picking him there is going to be looking like a mistake.
Especially considering they have a role for him if he was doing better. You know, this isn't a circumstance where he's buried. He could get himself out of this. It's very loose dirt. He could get out of this if he needed to, especially considering...
Yeah, he doesn't have some big stars ahead of him. They desperately need him.
Yeah, if he would be, you know, if they could slot him in at three and kind of that would stabilize their kind of front court rotation and everything like that, they'd be happy to do it. And he hasn't earned it. And so he's not making the most of a bad situation. And that's always tough. I'd have, if we're going to put a number on players, I'd put him in at eight.
Yeah, when you think about just what his long-term future is, when you're talking about someone drafted in the top five, you hope that that player can become a star. I think it's looking like the sun is setting on that pretty quickly at this point, especially because, again, this is another one of those ones where his performance in the league has... He's been bad in the ways that you worried he was going to be bad. He wasn't going to be able to get efficient. He wasn't going to be able to get to the foul line. He wasn't going to be able to play very well within the team concept. And he's going to be one of these guys who just jacks up a bunch of threes and doesn't make up at an incredibly high percentage. And that was the worry about him coming in. And that's what it's been so far. I would agree with you. I think just from a prospect standpoint, and you know, I'm not going to rule out the chance of him becoming a successful starter someday, but I think the star turn is looking very unlikely indeed for him. Let's go with Joakim Noah, who we talked about a little bit already. I mean, he's actually shooting 52%. That's better. Like, he had like one good offensive game against the Bulls, but it's more really from a defensive standpoint. I'm not sure. I actually would have a little bit lower panic rating on him. I'd probably go with like a three, just because I think he was good defensively last year. And to the extent that they're not defending well with him on the court, I think it's more of a communication issue and a players around him issue.
Yeah, I think there were some moments. Was that the Bulls game? I thought he did a pretty good job in. Like, he looked a little bit more spry.
Yeah, no, he was great in that game. He was much more aggressive, and I think he had like 16 points in that game.
Yeah, so I focus more on the defensive end just because that's where his value lies. You know, the offense is going to be, you know, as long as you make the assumption that he isn't what he was that year when he finished like fourth in the MVP race, that he's going to be more of a defensive support guy. And so I'd have it at a four maybe, just because you want his kind of impact to be more consistent. Like, that's kind of the idea of a rim protecting defensive anchor center, is that, you know, that the team does it. But I don't lay most of their problems on that end at his feet. It's just that he's not cleaning up as many misses as you would hope. And the other reason why it's a four and not a little bit lower than that is because, you know, he is on the older end. And so it's just finding the fountain of youth gets harder the further you are from prime.
I will say this, actually, maybe I should up it to a four or five, because now I think about what I've seen him, he has not really been able to affect guys at the rim the way we're used to seeing from him, that even when he's there, he's not having the same effect. And so I think that might be a little bit more of a concern. And then if you want to raise the level of panic about the 4 years, $72 million contract, yeah, that's like a 9.5.
Yeah, and it really always was, because the idea was that you wanted immediate value from him, because the back end of that's going to be grizzly. And you're not getting at the front end as much as you want.
I wonder if they ever considered trying to get Dwight Howard. I mean, they obviously settled on Noah. Like, his contract details leaked out before the free agent period even started, which is the first time I can ever remember that happening. And, you know, they would have had to probably not sign Brandon Jennings or not sign Courtney Lee, and they need Lee pretty desperately also. But man, I mean, Howard's contract would sure look a lot better. He looks totally good for Atlanta right now.
Or even someone like Dedmon, go really cheap, maybe give him a one-year deal, maybe a non-guarantee second, because you can pay him, let's say you pay him $5 million a year, because that gets more in line with what we had felt about Porzingis eventually becoming a center, is that that's sort of an idea. And now he's blocked, or your salary's blocked, either way. And that's a challenge.
Porzingis, he just may not be ready for that, though. I mean, we hope he's going to get there. But I mean, they just have not been able to stop anybody with him at center, and have not been able to get a defensive rebound in his 2 years there. So,
that's why
the hope is he'll get there, but it's a waste.
That's why I would have gone with the approach of kind of more of a year-by-year with those kind of centers, and just hope, and so you're ready that when he can take it, he'll just take the role and you slide that other guy into the backup spot. And, you know, I understand why it's very hard to get a good center at that rate. I mean, Noah demanded that price and they paid it to him, but it's a problem, especially for a team that wants to be, you know, that wants to flex their cap muscle every once in a while.
Justice Winslow, what would you say your number is with him? I think he's looked okay at times with the ball in his hands, but just still cannot make a shot to save his life. And And since that was his big weakness, maybe he will get there, but he's got a long way to go with that jump shot. And that's going to be something that's a concern for him, especially as a long-term prospect, if you're looking at him as like a starter at the three for a while.
I'm at a two for right now. I'm not particularly concerned. He's looked better with the ball in his hands, especially that impactful first game against the Orlando Magic. He looked really good in that circumstance, kind of a parallel to Giannis, where if a guy can't shoot, just give him the ball and hope he makes good decisions. His defense has been solid. I think he's been a part of their success on that end. And yeah, he can't shoot. But the question with him is, can he be better than like your fourth or fifth starter? Like, I think he can be at a starter level in terms of overall impact, but if he's a starter and doesn't improve in those areas, you're kind of pigeonholing him, and then you also have to do a lot around that. It's the same problem the Thunder are going to have to deal with Andre Roberson, is that with Roberson, you can use him. He's certainly a good player, but you want to have specific things around them. They already have Hassan Whiteside, who kind of likes shooting mid-range shots.
He's not as hopeless as Roberson.
No, not at all. But if he gets towards that realm, then you have to think about this a little bit differently, and then it's, you know, kind of, is the juice worth the squeeze? But I'm at a two because I think he can add to his game. I think he can get better, and he's good enough at his strengths already that I think he's usable in that way at present.
You know what? I think I'm going to check this out for the 15 and 60. He's only 14 to 36 in the restricted area.
Whew.
38% in the restricted area, and then he's 3 out of 20 on 3, so he's not able to score efficiently. I mean, I like that he's at least getting to the rim. Yeah, it's a little concerning, certainly, that he has not been able to shoot his jump shot and make it the confidence. I'm probably at about a 4 or 5 with him. The hope was that he could become an average starter on the wing this year, and he definitely is not there yet. Still very young, but a guy who has never shot it well, really, other than that one aberrational year when he shot 40% on threes at Duke. Never a shooter in high school, not a shooter last year, so definitely has a long way to go. Let's get to the Western Conference, the now 0-8 New Orleans Pelicans after a loss at Sacramento on Tuesday night.
If their goal is to make the playoffs, they should really be panicking, just because they're putting up a number that's going to be hard. And I would say the current estimate would be that the 8th seed in the West is going to be a higher win total than the 8th seed in the East. There are reasons to be kind of, let's call it, optimistic, just because they are missing Jrue Holiday's the most prominent one, but they're also missing Tyreek, who, you know, even if they got 20 minutes a game from him, would be a big help, because their surrounding talent has just been so just inferior this year.
Yeah, their next games are at Bucks and then at home against the Lakers and the Celtics. They have to turn it around quickly. The one encouraging thing, I would only put it at a 9 just because they're at least defending. This has been a team that's been at least in the top half of the league in defense for the first time in eons. But outside of that, it's really concerning. Their three-point shooting has been horrendous. We'll get to one of their players on the panic list in a moment. They at least are not taking that many bad shots from mid-range. It's just that their threes are not going in. And actually, we have two players on the panic list for them, and the reason they're there, Hill and Buddy Hield, is that none of them can hit threes, and they've really been way off. So I don't see any way that they can get back into playoff contention. I don't see any way even that they can beat their over under a 37 after going 0-8 to start the year.
Well, yeah, I mean, so they have 8 games already played, which means that to play 500, they would need to go, I think it's 37 and 37, and you know, so if you're going to go 8 games over 500 at that point, you know, that you're getting into some serious territory. And we haven't seen, you know, the only time they ever played that well was when they, that run when they ended up getting the 8th seed and then, you know, making it to the first round. And you can't expect that, especially considering Anthony Davis has been healthy so far, and that has not really been historically true. So I'd have them at a 7 just on the idea that they can get better, and also that, but if your goal is saying this team is going to make the playoffs, then it's a 9.
Yeah, maybe if we knew that Jrue Holiday was going to come back tomorrow, I might give them some kind of a shot. If you just hope that he could be that transformative for their offense, and they can't keep shooting this poorly on threes. Right now they're shooting 28% on threes, and they should be able to shoot better than that. They have at least some guys who have hit better than that in their careers, or Hield is not going to keep being this bad, you would hope. But I mean, the other thing that's a concern is it's not like their schedule has been so bad, right? They lost at home to the Nuggets in a close game. They lost at home to the Bucks in a close game. They lost at home in overtime to the Suns in a close game. They lost in overtime on the road against the Grizzlies. They lost on the road against the Kings. So they really have only had 3 games so far, 2 against the Warriors, 1 against the Spurs, where you're feeling like, oh, this is like an unwinnable game. They wouldn't have won anyway. They are losing games that they had a chance at winning. And I think that's really the more frustrating part, because the schedule will probably get harder from here on out.
Speaking of losing games you have a chance at winning, the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Oh, man. All right, so I had their over-under, I think, was 40.5. I thought that they were going to be slightly under that, but still get to 40 wins. If that's success for them, I mean, what are the chances that they actually succeed that now at 1-5?
40, 50%. I still think they have a shot. Like, when you look at the fundamentals of this team, they have a lot of things, right? They're, like, around league average in defense. I think they're a little bit actually above that in offense.
Well, we can't do the fundamentals with them, though,
because of the Memphis game.
That Grizzly game.
That's
if
right.
If you take that game out, they really have not been good at all, and they have had some awful defensive lapses against the teams that aren't even good on offense, whether it's Brooklyn, whether it's Oklahoma City. Like, those teams will lift them up.
Yeah, that's true. They've allowed 100 points in every game but that Memphis anomaly, and that's not a good sign. And they also have the kind of, even with Ricky Rubio, also this is colored by me seeing them in person and falling apart in that third quarter, is like, you can see some of the structural issues with them being a bad crunch time team. You know, that if they're not going to get the ball to Towns, if they're going to do more of this kind of like Wiggins kind of initiating pick and rolls, or Rubio when he's healthy, maybe they're like the Jazz last year where they lose some of those games, but they don't have the buffer, like, defensively, like that Utah team was much better defensively than the Minnesota team is. So yeah, it's gonna be tough for them to kind of make it all the way out, especially when they're, even though they have a coach GM combination person, I'm sure that they would understand if they struggled for one more year.
Another reason for concern with them, they are shooting the lights out on three-pointers right now. This is not a team that really has that type of personnel. 39% on three-pointers so far, fourth in the league. That's not going to continue. And defensively, they're right in the middle of the pack defending three-pointers. So that's not really like they're getting unlucky defensively. I mean, they're just getting killed in the paint. And Tim and I talked about this last night, of just how every shot the Nets took was either at the rim or a three-pointer. It was really just bad defense. And it may just be that it's going to take some time for these guys defensively. I think the offense is going to be okay. And maybe Rubio coming back can help everything. They've always been terrible without him. It sounds like he's going to get reevaluated at the end of this road trip once they return on Thursday, and that maybe at that point there might be some hope for him returning relatively quickly. He still has that indefinite designation, though. But yeah, another couple of losses here. I mean, they have to win this game against Orlando on the road. Like, that is just one that if you want to be a playoff team in the Western Conference, with the way Orlando is playing, like, that's a game that you have to win. I mean, if they go to 1-6 now, we thought, all right, 1-4 is not the end of the world. They can just beat Brooklyn and they can beat Minnesota, but now they're on a back-to-back against a rested Orlando team. Could get bad for these guys. I'm going to say, at least as far as like this team making the playoffs, getting to 40 wins, I'm probably at about a 7 here. Even if you have had some encouraging signs from what some of their players have been able to do offensively, the defense being so bad is a massive concern.
I'd have them at 7-2. And something else to note, and again, this does get into the anomaly that was that Memphis game, is that so far they've been second in offensive rebounding, which is something else that I don't expect to persist, even though they've been playing two traditional bigs a higher proportion of the time. Second best is really, really strong for that. So if they take a little bit of a downgrade there, you know, their overall offense efficiency should improve by, you know, getting Rubio back in there. But it's a hard but possible road. So that's why I give them a 7.
Phoenix Suns, don't need to spend a lot of time on them. I'd say they're probably like a 2. They're 2-6. They've had some competitive games, but I mean, they lucked into one basically in overtime with two crazy buzzer beaters against the Pelicans. They could be 1-7. They've been competitive at times. Their bench has been horrible. And then Earl Watson decided to make their bench their starters by starting Marquese Chris, and that went incredibly poorly, as you would expect, starting not only a 19-year-old rookie, but one who is not renowned for his headiness. And he was a negative 22 in that game with the starters. And also Tyson Chandler didn't play. Like, whenever Len has played, they've been bad. And you expect that it's going to move into development mode pretty quickly for these guys. And you know, maybe they even would seek to move Jared Dudley or something like that to a contender while he still has a little bit of value, something along those lines. But yeah, I mean, it's looking like just, you know, another 25 win season at best for them. And for a team that might have hoped to get into the 30s, that's probably not going to happen. So, I mean, I'd say a 2 just because they didn't have very high expectations, but it looks like they may fall short even of those.
Yeah, a 3 for me for almost the same reasons, just that they look like kind of a run-of-the-mill non-playoff team, you know, just not good enough to win consistently, to beat the bad teams and then pick off a couple against the good teams that you need to get into anything to be a real playoff contender in the Western Conference.
Dallas, if we had done this 3 days ago when they were 0-5, I probably would have been at a 10. They have pulled out 2 wins against not the greatest competition, the Bucks at home, and then nice win last night that Tim and I talked about against the Lakers at Staples. Harrison Barnes has been looking great, which I think is a really good sign for them also, but they are still 2-5. They've got a ways to go. And how are the West standings looking like in terms of just where those teams and the lower end of the West playoff bracket are shaking out?
So I would basically say that the top 6 seeds are probably going to make it. So then it's whether they end up as the top 6 or something else is another open question. But then you have Houston at 4-3, Lakers at 4-4, Memphis at 4-4, Kings at 4-5, Nuggets at 3-4, Mavs at 2-5, Suns at 2-6, Wolves at 1-5. So they're all close together. I think Houston probably will stand out among that group just because they'll win some games by beating people by a billion. But then the Mavericks are in that mix for the 8 spot. The problem for them, and the reason why I would still, yeah, you're right, it would have been, you know, 9 or a 10 before. And the reason I have them at a 7 is that we're learning something we probably already knew, which is that they have to be really healthy, and they haven't been, and there's no reason to believe that that's going to change.
And if they could get Deron Williams back and Dirk back, and Barnes could still play at anything close to this level, you might be at the point where you're looking at like a near top 5 offense for these guys, and that'll solve a lot of their problems. Like whenever Dirk is in, you're not going to be that good defensively, but they have defended well when he's been out of the game, and that's something that Dirk jokingly talked about. We'll play good defense when I'm not out there. And the other nice thing for them too, the Nuggets have really had 2 incredible come from ahead losses against the Blazers and against the Grizzlies already. If the Nuggets were 5-2 right now instead of 3-4, that might make things a lot more difficult. The Wolves are 1-5, even behind where the Mavericks are. The Kings aren't scaring anyone. They have a tough schedule coming up. The Lakers, I think you would expect them to regress. The Grizzlies could have injury luck. There's nobody who is really looking like I'm so scared of them right now. And that I think has to be somewhat encouraging for Mavericks fans. I mean, they're going to go to 2-6 tonight, probably against the Warriors. And we don't know when Dirk is going to come back. But the fact that if they were 0-7 right now, and they very easily could have been, it'd probably be over for them, you would think. But getting those 2 wins were just massive.
Yeah, it really was. And now they have to, you know, they're going to have to win some road games, like because they have, I think it's 5 of their next 6 are on the road. And so they aren't all against the strongest opponents. They try to pull off a win at MSG against the Knicks, try to beat the Magic. But they're going to have to kind of keep their heads above water also. And something to remember, even though this is a veteran team that won't lose perspective on it, is that, you know, if they, let's say they lose all the games in this stretch that they should lose, you know, if they stay 4 or 5 games under 500 for another 10, you know, that can be a little bit hard to take, even if nobody really jumps out of the pack, just because as you just keep hitting your head against the wall, because they play the Warriors, the Celtics, the Clippers, and the Spurs, and the Cavs all in the next 10 games.
Well, and there's also a concern that Deron Williams with a calf injury, Dirk Achilles soreness, those are the type of injuries where it's really tough to know when to come back. There's definitely going to be an impetus for them to come back early if they see the season slipping away. And then if those guys get re-injured, now you're really in big trouble. So I'd say I'm probably at about like a 7.5 for them. I did not expect them to make the playoffs anyway. But these last 2 wins will give you some hope. The way Barnes has played, it's given them some hope. Seth Curry has looked pretty good too. They're getting enough, I think, offensively. And then the defense hasn't been terrible. Bogut has had some decent games, some bad ones. All right, this one will be interesting. The Warriors, of course, were talked about as this incredible monolith, was going to be one of the greatest teams of all time, if not the greatest team of all time. And I had them for 69 wins. Their over-under was 66.5. If you're just looking at them hitting that over-under, number one, hitting that over-under, number two, winning the championship, what is your panic level for them so far?
Probably a 6 for the over-under and a 4 for the championship. So the 6 for the over-under is just that's a lot of wins. And the game against the Lakers really does resonate a little bit just because they were flat in every way in that game. And when a team needs to win 69, they can't do that very often. And sometimes you even have to win some games when you're flat. And so they haven't really done that so far. And then, you know, they got outclassed by the Spurs. That is what it is.
But yeah, and I think even the fact that they couldn't blow that Pelicans team out with Steph Curry scoring 46 points and having this crazy performance.
That
they were
horrible
up 20.
Third quarter was, yeah.
And you know, and a lot of it too goes to Pachulia, who we'll talk about momentarily. I mean, if you take out the minutes that he's playing, they actually probably are looking much more. I mean, if you look at, they really, it seems like they have two problems right now. Like one is, maybe you could say three. One is just the minutes that Pachulia has been out there. They've been awful. That's one. Another one is just that they're shooting poorly on threes. They're at 32%, which is in the lower part of the league. That's not going to continue. And then another one maybe you could say is their defensive rebounding. It hasn't been that good. So I think that Pachulia, they'll either find a solution for him by the playoffs. Maybe they'll even make a move. Looney has looked good. McCaw has looked good. If it really gets to the point of desperation, they could probably move one of those guys and get someone who'd be an upgrade. Maybe they'll try JaVale and get something out of him. Or, you know, there's still maybe David West will play more. They've actually been excellent when he's been on the floor so far. A lot of those things, I think they'll be okay there with the center thing. I think they'll be okay with the three-point shooting. And then they have some players who are looking a little bit old. I would put it at a 6 for the wins and a 4 for the champion. I think that's actually a pretty good rating right now. They definitely look like they have some holes, and also just the fact that the effort has not been there on a game-to-game basis has been a concern, and maybe understandable for a team psychologically that's been through two of these regular seasons. Last year they kicked ass in the regular season and it didn't end up meaning anything, and now you got KD, so you're naturally thinking like, oh, it's going to be a cakewalk for us.
Yeah. Ready to get some players.
Solomon Hill, 4-year, $48 million contract in the offseason, 26 minutes a game, 5.3 points per game, shooting 28% from the field, 33% on threes, 7.0 PER. I liked the player. I thought he could be a quality player as a four. He has not had a chance to play there at all because they just don't have anybody who's good to play the three. They don't really even have a single traditional three on the roster right now. And I think as long as he plays the three, he's going to continue to really struggle on defense. And he's also not really quite like a lockdown guy at the three either. I think he can be okay, but we saw, for example, that Alvin Gentry seemed to trust Dante Cunningham more guarding Kevin Durant than him. And he also was just weirdly jacking up some terrible shots trying to be aggressive early on in that Warriors game.
I'm excited to get to use the number for time to panic that is exactly their PER. It's a 7 because... part of it is that there is this mitigating factor that he's not playing the role that we thought he would be good in. And there are some reasons for that, but there are also some bad ones just because they're missing some depth on the wing. And so they can't really play it in that way. But also part of it is
if Pondexter or Evans could come back and play some three and move him to the four, and then you have AD at the five, then I think you actually can get to the point. He provides a little bit of playmaking as well, just more spacing on the floor. They also, as we mentioned, have just been shooting so horribly on three pointers. He's part of that, but he also suffers from nobody else being able to make a three either. I still think he could be okay, but if he's going to just be their starting three and they're not going to have Jrue Holiday he's going to be forced into too much of a role like he has been offensively so far, it's going to continue to be bad. I would agree with you. 7.
I'll let you pick the next one.
Well, probably Buddy Hield would be the next one.
Yeah, that's fair.
But both for this year, shooting 20% on three-pointers doesn't look comfortable. You have to imagine he'll come around a little bit there, although again, it does take guys sometimes to get their sea legs from the NBA three-point line, despite the fact that he kind of made his living shooting super long threes when he was at Oklahoma. That's just a little bit different when every single shot is like that. He's really been trying to get his legs into it. You can tell he's really aiming the ball. Finally hit a couple of threes late against Sacramento last night before he then promptly fouled Aaron Aflalo to give up a 4-point play and effectively end the game. He also has really struggled on closeouts too, just not used to how far you have to go at the NBA 3-point line. And he'll either get there late, he'll fly in the air and the guy will go by him, or just not be there at all. And so his defense hasn't been good. He still gets guarded out there okay. But again, him not looking good at all right now, this is a guy who is supposed to be ready to play.
I would say it's a 4 overall, but a 6, maybe even higher if you think that he's going to be a long-term starter, like if that was your expectation, because a goal in the NBA is that you want a guy to be able to have a special skill and then bring other things to the table. And his ball handling has, I think it's been better than I expected, which is nice. And the shooting should turn around, but it's a long way to get from shooting 34% from the field, 20% from three, to making that your plus. You know, he can get, I have no concerned that he's going to get above league average or something like that. And the guy, I got into a little bit of a thing because I responded to Bontemps by, he was talking about how, you know, guys that good end up shooting better. I brought up Adam Morrison. The arrow I kept in my quiver during that Twitter argument was John Jenkins. And John Jenkins is the reason why I get a little bit concerned about guys like Buddy Hield. It's just that Jenkins was great at Vanderbilt, did a really nice job, was he had a kind of a similar profile. Hield was doing more complicated stuff, but Jenkins was doing really well, and then just never found his footing in the NBA. So it's not a guarantee that players who succeeded the way that Hield did are going to make it as a pro, but I still believe that Jenkins is the exception rather than the rule.
Someone we forgot in the Eastern Conference, and I would agree with your ratings on Buddy, by the way. Jeff Teague, 29 minutes a game, which is low. They don't have any other point guards on the roster, but he's actually been losing minutes late. I think in at least one game, Monte Ellis closed for him because he was awful. 11.3 points, 6.7 assists, but only 32% from the field, 23% from three. He'll get better on those, I think, but it really is showing that that Hawks system made a lot of guys look good. I think he was among them. You consider the incredible spacing that he had to work with on those Hawks teams. And the hope was, oh, he had this partially torn patellar tendon, which he talked about on Instagram after the season, and that, all right, he's going to be healthy again now, you'll see. And there's also the fact, though, that he's a small point guard who's getting into his late 20s. And so I think that has looked like, and you know, he just hasn't really had any like really quick moves that have wowed you. And so if he's just going to kind of not be a guy who can really create separation off the dribble, now you're relying more on your floater game, your jumper. He's not a fantastic natural distributor, and his defense, of course, has been terrible too.
Yeah, I'd be at an 8 for him, and the reason why is because he needs to be better than like a league average starter for this team to get anything close to their potential. You know, they have other players. Paul George, you know, can be the best player in a successful team, but Turner can help, but Teague needs to be kind of that, at least offensively, he needs to be one of the linchpins for them.
And he's got to at least hit a shot. Like with he and Ellis, if those guys are both going to shoot under 30% from 3-point range, now there's just nothing for Paul George to do. You just help off those guys till the end of the game.
Yeah, and they're not, Thaddeus Young doesn't get the kind of respect where you're like, oh my God, I can't leave Thaddeus Young to do it. So you have all these guys where you don't want to leave them, but you feel like you can if you have to. And if that extends to basically the entire roster, then nobody gets space.
Yeah, so I would say probably an 8 again, because this is another one of those ones too, where we felt like this could be an issue at the start of the season, and now he's been bad in all the ways that we thought he was going to. So that's another reason for concern there. Last guy, Tony Parker.
Oof, I mean, Parker hasn't had it at all this year. I mean, he's averaging less than 6 points a game. So first of all, he's playing about the same minute total. So 26 and a half. I think that's pretty close to what he did last year, but he's averaging less than 6 points a game, about 4 assists a game, and just not making shots. He's, you know, making about a third of his attempts, and he's not creating the separation that was his trademark early in his career. You don't see all the kind of tricks because he's not creating the space that he was before. And also, unsurprisingly, when you look at all that, San Antonio hasn't been that dynamic offensively when he's been in the game. If we're talking about Parker and as just himself, not the overall point guard situation, I'm going to go with a 9.
Does the fact that he has missed a few games now with a sore knee, does that make you feel better or worse?
I don't know. I mean,
it's tough, right? Because you could say, hey, well, that's the explanation. On the other hand, it's like, well, this is another injury for a guy who's pretty old.
Yeah, I think those both feed together and it makes it a neutral at this point, because if he gets better,
another thing, yeah.
If he gets better after it and you say, oh, well, then you can attribute it, but while he's still kind of in this phase, I think it's a neutral.
The other problem too is that his fit with Pau Gasol is horrendous in the pick and roll. He's has made strides in his career, certainly as a defender, but just at his age, with his decline athleticism, he's not going to be a quality option at point guard for long stretches. Gasol, of course, has no mobility in the pick and roll, and Parker is probably playing most of his minutes with Gasol. He's in a negative 11.3 net rating, and those are in games that the Spurs were winning. I think they won all four of the games that he played. Definitely a concern. He's not shooting the ball well either. He's never advanced his range out to three. And when you consider the fit too with guys like Aldridge and Kawhi Leonard, who like to go to work, he has not been able to provide that penetration off the dribble anymore. So now if he's just going to spot up, again, fit issues with the guys who like to just ISO, you can just help off of Tony Parker, and he's not going to make you, even if he makes you pay, it's usually going to be with a long two instead of a three.
Yeah, I mean, if he's willing to play that kind of, have Patty Mills switch roles and be kind of a central figure on the second unit, I think that could work reasonably well. But it's so complicated personally, emotionally, when you're dealing with somebody who was a centerpiece of this franchise for almost its entire successful run.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about him fulfilling the expectations that we have and that the Spurs team has of being a quality point guard on a team that's going to go to the second round of the playoffs and beyond, yeah, I'm putting it at a 9 as well. I think he hopefully won't continue to be this bad. As you mentioned, he's shooting only 33% from the field. He'll get better than that. But yeah, not good for him so far. And Patty Mills is great as a bench option, but he's going to be overstretched, I think, as a starter as well.
Yeah.
All right, we done here?
Yeah. So I'll have the standard workup of Locked On Warriors and the Athletic material off of Warriors Mavericks, and working on still trying to get out the last of the 2017 offseason previews for different divisions. I have all of them submitted, but it's just getting them through. And then for those of you who are interested, the League Pass Games of the Week, as I think the current title we're using, is back to its original home on Real GM.
All right, man. I'll see you in a few hours. Follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA, and we're looking forward to maybe having a special announcement in the next couple of days here. So stay tuned for that. But other than that, we'll be back tomorrow. Till then.